We recorded this podcast over the course of three very fun, very tropical days in Miami, Florida. But aside from swimming through the thick, humid air of the city, we recorded a show full of great stuff. I was personally really moved by the young singer on the show who brought us this wonderful song set to the words of the poet Emily Dickinson. And the audience was incredible, completely packed with high school kids. They lend a great energy to it all. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Enjoy.
From NPR.
It's From the Top.
Celebrating the power of music.
In the hands of America's kids.
Here's our host, concert pianist Christopher O'Reilly.
Thank you. We're broadcasting from Gussman Concert Hall at the Philip and Patricia Frost School of Music, located on the campus of the University of Miami in Coral Gables, Florida. I want to thank our host, the Donna E. Shalala Music Reach program here at the Frost School, for bringing us down to Miami. As a matter of fact, our special invited audience today is made up of students who are part of Music Reach. They are some of the hundreds of kids from 4th to 12th grade from all over Miami-Dade County who get weekly hands-on lessons from students at the Frost School of Music. Welcome, you guys. Thanks for coming. Three of our young performers today are living or studying on the East Coast of Florida. We'll hear an 18-year-old oboist who's a member of the Greater Miami Youth Symphony. We'll revisit an alum of our show who's continuing her piano studies here at the Frost School of Music. And we'll hear this 14-year-old from up the coast in Palm Beach Gardens. Please welcome 14-year-old violinist Matthew Hakkarainen. Matthew, welcome. Tell everybody what we're going to play.
We will be playing Fritz Kreisler's Preludium and Allegro.
When you are set, we will take it from the top. Thank you. Matthew Hatarainen, 14 years old, our violinist from Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, played Fritz Kreisler's Preludium and Allegro. Well, Matthew, that was glorious. Thank you for that. What a way to open the show. I want to ask you about a couple of competitions that you've been in, like your very first competition. Talk about that and what it meant to you.
Yeah, my very first competition was the FFMC Junior Convention in Jacksonville. I was 5 years old when I entered for the first time, and I was playing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star and a variation.
Shameless showpiece, obviously. Crowd-pleaser.
Yeah, of course. And it was so great. I won an honorable mention, and I got this little blue ribbon, and I can't even describe the feeling I got. It was just amazing. And then we even went to SeaWorld, and we celebrated afterwards. And I think that, like, that competition, I started doing more and more, and I feel like that was a great place for me to start and then gauge myself from there.
At your first international competition in Germany, you had an accompanist who was a little doubtful about your abilities. Not very encouraging. Tell that story.
Yeah, so I went to, when I was 13, I went to the Louis Spohr International Competition in Germany, and my accompanist was Olga, and before I talk about the funny story, she really was a wonderful pianist for me, and really the best that I could have had. But the funny story is that when we finished the first round, I hadn't been preparing too much for the competition, hadn't been looking at the music for too long, so she was pretty sure that I wasn't going to make it past the first round. She had packed all of her stuff, and she had gone over to the train station, and she was waiting by the ticket counter, and so that when I called to say that I didn't make it to the next round, she could get a ticket because she had to go to another festival in Switzerland, I think. And so, but to all of our shock, I made it into the next round, and I had to call her frantically. I texted her and no response, and I'm like calling her, and then finally she picks up and she's like, she doesn't even say hello. She's just like, are you serious? Do we have to do another round? Like, so Yeah, I was like, well, unfortunately, yeah, we do. And the next round is tomorrow, so we kind of have to practice. And so we did that. And then after the second round, she was sure I wouldn't make it into the final round. So she packed up all of her stuff again, and we said our goodbyes again. And she goes over to the train station, and she's waiting by the ticket counter. And I call her, and I say, look, you're going to have to come back again, because I made it into the final round now. And so we went through that twice, and it was pretty unbelievable, but it was a great experience to go there, and I'm so happy that I got to meet her.
So you were shocked that I came out to accompany you and didn't have my bags packed by the piano. With that kind of encouragement, I mean, it's amazing, the stuff you've gotten up to. I mean, and the level at which you play, Matthew, it's just extraordinary.
Thank you.
It's such a pleasure playing with you. We wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Matthew Hakkarainen, 14 years old, our violinist from Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. Matthew comes to us from our friends at the Metabount School of Music.
Over the last 10 years, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation have awarded over $2 million in scholarships to talented young musicians who have financial need. We still have more to give. Go to fromthetop.org to learn more. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. Our second performer is an 18-year-old oboist who lives in the Coconut Grove neighborhood of Miami. His name is Antonio Urrutia. Antonio and I will perform the third movement of Robert Schumann's Three Romances for Piano and Oboe.
Thank you.
Antonio Urrutia, 18-year-old oboist from here in Miami, performed the third movement of Robert Schumann's Three Romances for Piano and Oboe. Beautifully done, Antonio. I love Schumann in general, but in particular these beautiful and fragile pieces for oboe, and you had all the poetry and spontaneity. It's really a tightrope, you know, that kind of spontaneity really has to be there, and it's just beautiful playing that with you. Thank you. Now, wait a minute. I was reading about you, and before you played the oboe, you had a middle school band teacher who forced you not to play the oboe?
Okay, so before we paint her out in a really negative light, she did not force me not to play the oboe. She was just very picky towards letting me play the oboe. She was challenging me to work to play the oboe. So we had this thing in middle school where we had to do weekly assignments on this program called Smart Music. And she gave me an ultimatum. You could switch the oboe from clarinet if you finish all the year's assignments by December.
On clarinet.
On clarinet. And I was like, really? Are you going to make me do that? And she was like, yeah, if you want to switch. And I'm like, okay. And then I did it. And I was able to switch the oboe. And maybe that working so hard to switch this instrument made me love it even more. Like, I wanted to play it so bad, like, once I started playing it, I gave it my all. I don't know. It's an interesting idea.
I mean, I love the clarinet, but gosh, that's a lot to go through, a whole year of studies to get to the oboe.
Well, a little bit.
Good you found your voice. And beyond your love of oboe and classical music, you love visual art. Tell everybody about that trip you made to the Met Museum in New York.
Okay, so I love art. Like, art is one of my other passions besides oboe playing. I love art history. I've taken years of art history in school. And every time I go on a trip, New York, I make sure to go to the Met or any major museums. And a month ago, I went to the Met, and I had just been studying Northern Renaissance art, and I love Northern Renaissance art. It seems kind of trivial to love it that much, but I love it. So I really wanted to see an altarpiece by Flemish artist John van Eyck, and I was like dying to see his altarpiece. I'm like, I'm going to see it. And I get to the Met, and I go to the wing, and the wing ends up being roped off. And I was like, what is this? It's a Metropolitan Museum of Art. Why is there a wing roped off? And they were like, I'm sorry, we don't have enough staff to cover all the wings, so you can't go. And I'm like, excuse me? What do you mean? I can't go see the Northern Renaissance section. And they're like, we don't have enough staff. And I'm like, no, this is the Met Museum. This is one of the best museums in the world. What do you mean I can't see the section? So they were like, I'm sorry, you can't. And I'm like, no. I came all the way here to go to this museum, and I am not leaving until I see this section. And the people were like, I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do. And I'm like, yes, it is. Close off this section and take me to the Northern Renaissance section. And after my yelling, basically, they roped off the section I was at, and they took me to see the Northern Renaissance painting section. Yeah. And I saw my altarpiece, so it all worked out.
Well, I mean, after all... I mean, you must have been one of the only people in the museum who wasn't just wandering around from gallery to gallery, but had something in particular you wanted to see. So good for you, sticking to your guns. Gosh, you're such a cultured guy.
Thank you.
So as a result of that, we asked you to bring... Well, you keep all your music on your iPhone. You've got a 64-gig iPhone.
Yes, I do.
Tell everyone what's on it and what your friends say about your musical choices.
I checked earlier to make sure, but I have exactly 58 gigabytes worth of classical music on my iPhone.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. And, like, okay, so my friends kind of, they don't tease me because they respect it, because it's not mainstream. I am what I like to refer myself as the real hipster.
So when they say, okay, well, you know, we listen to pop music because it speaks to our times, and so what can you say about classical music that can dissuade them from that kind of high horse attitude?
Classical music is timeless. It's like trying to compare, like, for all of us here in Miami, if we go to Wynwood and we go to a cool modern art gallery, we're like, oh, awesome, this art's so cool. And, like, yeah, you want to hang it up in your house and stuff, but why do that when you can go to the Metropolitan Museum of Art and see a masterpiece by Gustav Klimt? Mm-hmm. Like, they're two different stories. You can't compare them. And I personally like, in this case, classical music and the painting by Gustav Klimt more.
Right. Well, to speak to this point, we've been asking our young musicians who've amassed a huge collection of classical music, but do have friends who need a little convincing, to pick out a cut of music that they'd play for their friends to entice them to take a break from the all-consuming pop world. You know, a piece that's so immediately likable or emotionally engaging that your friends can't help but ask for more. So, Antonio, are you ready?
I'm
ready.
Help
us out with this. Okay, hit play, tell us what the piece is, and talk about why you think it's a port of entry for the classically music impaired.
Okay, so this piece might not be the most cliche piece. A lot of people have not heard of it, but it's the third movement of the Fifth Symphony by Dmitri Shostakovich, and I think it's probably the most beautiful piece of classical music out there. Shostakovich was living in a really hard time during Russia, during communism under Stalin, and he was not given any artistic creativity. So with this piece, he is trying to conform to their values, but at the same time, kind of waving his fingers at Shostakovich, at the Stalin. So he's basically like revolting against the institution, and I think this is just really cool. And that kind of connects us to today's youth, as we're kind of revolting against the set-in rules. And I just think it's absolutely beautiful and ethereal and poetic.
What a wonderful choice, Antonio. That's great.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, your hard work and passion are paying off big time. Next fall, you'll be coming here to the Frost School of Music, and they're giving you a full ride scholarship. Congrats for that in the Stamps
thank
program.
You. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us, Antonio. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
It was a great pleasure playing with you. Great pleasure playing with you. I know you're going to be doing great
thank
stuff
you.
Here at Frost School. Antonio Urrutia, 18 years old, from here in Miami. Now we're going to leave Florida for a while and meet an outstanding percussion trio from Midwest Young Artists in Chicago. They are Trio Volta, Finley Lau, 16, and Joseph Bricker and Daniel Sayuni, both 18. They're going to perform Stubernick by Mark Ford. Joseph, we've got you at the mic. Would you describe the choreography of this piece?
So you'll see the three performers, the three marimbists, all play on the same instrument to simulate Guatemalan marimba music, where everyone would play on the same instrument. And in this piece, what you'll see is us playing some unconventional marimba techniques. So Finley will be going to the front of the instrument to play with the shafts of his mallets on the resonators, and Daniel will be going to the end board to play on the piece.
Thank you.
Trio Volta from Midwest Young Artists in Chicago played Mark Ford's Stubernick. Since our audience today is made up of kids who are getting hands-on music lessons as part of the Music Reach Project at the Frost School here at the University of Miami, we've gathered some of them together to ask their own questions of Trio Volta, kind of giving me a little break. So who have we got first?
Hi, I'm Samantha Solomon from South Miami Senior High School. And we've actually been playing this piece in our percussion program, and I'm wondering what strategies did you guys use to rehearse once you had all learned your individual parts?
Daniel, you want to field that one?
Yeah, great piece. It's fun. I guess after that, it's about finding ways to make certain like moments in the piece really come out. So we focus a lot on hitting certain points together. And as you know, in percussion, there's no sneaking in. Either you hit it together or you don't. So we do a lot to practice breathing together and prepping together. And the more we get to know each other, it gets easier because like I'm more able to be in tune with how they're moving and how they're going to prep. So I can know like when Finley does a certain motion, what that means. Or before we get to this part, I know that Joe does this motion. And when he does that motion, I know how to respond to it because I'm more attuned to how they're going to move and how they're going to play.
Good question. Speaking of cueing, though, Finley, I guess Joseph is easy to cue off of. Why in particular?
Yeah, Joe's a very dramatic guy, and like Daniel started saying, breathing in a chamber group really helps us, and between all the breathing and all the big head motions Joe does, sometimes I wonder if his head might explode or fall off.
Who's got another question? Who's next here?
Hi, so I'm Raphael from Riviera Prep School, and I would just like to ask for... what advice would you give when you start a new piece?
Joseph, how about that for you?
So when I start a new piece, I'm going to say that it's hard, right? So notes are difficult to learn. So when we go into a first rehearsal, I like to sort of put on a mask, and I like to show them that I'm confident, although I probably know like 20% of the notes, but you wouldn't know. So being confident is incredibly important because if you're not confident, then you're just going to be worse. You're not going to play the right notes. And so I think that that would be the best advice I could give you.
Getting your game face on.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He's kind of the Tony Robbins of the percussion world. Okay, one more. Who are you and what's your question?
Hi, I'm Simon Velasco from Matter Lakes Academy. I just wanted to ask you, so outside playing with the trio, what have been your musical experiences?
What's the favorite musical experience you've had, Daniel?
I think last year I was playing with this honor band, and we were playing David Maslanka's Give Us the State, which is a great piece. But I remember at the end, it was this really ethereal, otherworldly experience. It was like I felt like these chills go down my spine, and like I didn't have control over my arms anymore. And to me, it felt like God was like telling me how the music should sound and playing through me, or whatever it is that you believe in, like, I don't know, some force, it could be just the power of music itself, whatever it is, it felt like some otherworldly thing or force was, like, deciding how the music should sound for me. I was no longer in control, and it just, like, poured out of my body, and, like, my arms were moving on their own, and it was just, I can't even describe it, but it was incredible.
Great questions all. I think you're, you know, Daniel, it's amazing watching you. It's quite clear that it's not just about good rhythm and good tempo. It's about, as you say, the preparation. When you see them, they're not only coming in together, but even the upstroke on the sticks is exactly the same height. And I don't think that's a matter of, you know, taking a ruler and setting it there. I think it's a matter of breathing together, making your heartbeats together, putting your game face on, of course. It all comes through and makes for a great, great performance. Great work, you guys. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Trio Volta, three terrific teenage percussionists from Midwestern artists in Chicago. They're here in Miami, accompanied by the president of MYA, Dr. Alan Dennis.
For behind-the-scenes stories, features on From the Top alumni, and videos of our wonderful young performers making music and getting out into the community beyond the concert hall, visit fromthetop.org/blog.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and from U.S. Trust, who believes that the arts play a vital role in stimulating the hearts and imaginations of our country's best young musicians, as well as NPR listeners. From New England Conservatory, where young artists and teachers are transforming classical music. Online at necmusic.edu. From the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, providing scholarships to high-achieving students with financial need. jkcf.org. And from the listeners who support this NPR station.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the power of music in the hands of America's kids. This week, we're coming to you from Gussman Concert Hall at the Philip and Patricia Frost School of Music, located on the campus of the University of Miami in Coral Gables, Florida. Up next, a teenage mezzo-soprano from New Orleans performs a musical setting of a poem by Emily Dickinson. Today's show from the University of Miami's Frost School of Music is made possible with support from the William R. Keenan Charitable Trust and the Howard and Geraldine Pollinger Family Foundation.
My name is Emily Sheets. I'm 17 years old, and that's my grandfather singing. His name was Norman Traigle, and he was a really famous bass baritone, especially famous for roles where he had to evoke terror. Like this one, the tormented Reverend Olin Blitch in Carlisle Floyd's Susanna. It was a role he created in 1956. I have this recording on my iPhone. How cool is that? Unfortunately, he died before I was born. My mom is an opera singer, too. When I was younger, I thought that opera was just something she did. I'd hear her practicing, and I was like, oh, it's just my mother. I didn't realize how crazy it is to have your mother wailing high C's in your living room. I wasn't interested in the opera world. I was more into music like this. Taylor Swift. I wanted to be just like her. It's true. I wanted a career in pop music like any other red-blooded American girl. But my mom is the chair of vocal music at the New Orleans Center for Creative Arts, our arts high school. And when it came time to audition, I was accepted singing a classical piece. But my heart wasn't in it. Then I spent a summer at Tanglewood. I was surrounded by so many teenagers who were totally committed to singing classical music, and I was exposed to so many incredible performances, like the Boston Symphony playing Mahler's Second. I can't even describe what I felt that night. The intricacy of that music, the complexity, the fact that an entire life was packed into that symphony. It changed my life, and I wasn't about to go back into pop music. Now I'm going to sing one of the pieces I learned for Tanglewood. It's a setting by Ricky Ian Gordon of the Emily Dickinson poem, Will There Really Be a Morning? When I sing this, I try to be the voice of a young girl who's asking, will I ever be happy again? Will there really be a morning after all of this darkness? I remember that that's what I felt like the summer my father died. My father was my best friend, so when he passed away, I didn't know if I would ever be happy again. Singing this song really helped me by putting some of the things I'd gone through into poetry and music. I hope you enjoy it.
Ricky Ian Gordon's setting of the Emily Dickinson poem, Will There Really Be a Morning, sung by Emily Sheets, 17 years old, from Metairie, Louisiana, just outside of New Orleans. Emily is one of our Jack Kent Cook Young Artists. Emily, that was so gorgeous. I can't thank you enough. I mean, what's so great about classical music, I think, in this particular instance, you have this just devastatingly depressing poem, and there's very little in the poem itself to give a sense of any hope, any positivism, any sort of feeling that there might be a morning, that there might be happiness, and yet I'm sure, you know, the gorgeous harmonies, you know, really talk all about that. You know, there's a melancholy sense of it, but there's just this, there is a sense of hope. I think the composer is in there giving his interpretation of the poem and saying, yes, there will be a morning. I think so. And you bring such beauty and poise and depth to the song. So thank you for helping me discover that piece.
Thank you.
Emily, you mentioned the New Orleans Center for Creative Arts, a high school full of kids studying all kinds of artistic disciplines. A place like that breeds collaboration, and I hear you collaborate with someone pretty close to you there.
Yes, there's a lot of collaboration that happens at NOCA, New Orleans Center for Creative Arts, and I collaborate most often with a classical ballet dancer in the dance department who also happens to be my boyfriend, and we've been together for around 2 years now, but we collaborate a lot. Sometimes he choreographs dances to songs that I sing, and he also choreographs different pieces for our opera scenes productions and our opera, too. So he's been in most of those as well.
Fantastic. So you get to sing and he's dancing at the same. I'm sorry, he wasn't on stage with us for this.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, gosh. So I understand you've been together for 2 years, and he really stepped up for your two-year anniversary.
Oh, yes, he did. Since I live in New Orleans, there's a lot of, like, really, really great food, but also a lot of it happens to be really expensive. So he took me to this fancy Italian restaurant in the French Quarter called Italian Barrel, and he spent so much money. It was unbelievable, but he definitely gained a lot of points for that.
Definitely gets an A for that. You get an A, too, Emily. That was extraordinary. Really loved playing that with you.
Thank you so much,
Emily. All the best. Emily Sheets, 17-year-old soprano from Metairie, Louisiana.
Today's show is part of a whole week of outreach activities our young performers are conducting all over Miami. Learn about From the Top's national outreach programs at fromthetop.org. And while you're there, check out our weekly podcast featuring bonus content not heard on the radio broadcast. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. From time to time, we like to celebrate alums of our show, and given that we're at the University of Miami's Frost School of Music, who better to feature today than one of our favorite alums who just happens to be studying here? Please welcome back to the From the Top stage, Dasha Bukartseva.
Thank you so
much. Good to be with you, Dasha. I'm looking so forward to your performance. What have you brought to play for us?
I'm going to play two movements from Janáček's On an Overgrown Path. The first one is called Our Evenings, and second one, A Blown Away Leaf.
Thank you.
two movements from Janáček's On an Overgrown Path, performed by Dasha Bukartseva, a 22-year-old alum of From the Top, who's studying here at the University of Miami Frost School of Music. It's such we talk about the appeal of classical music. I mean, the ability to tell a story, to be so eloquent and get the narrative thread of a piece of music, you do so beautifully with this Janáček, and of course it lends itself to
Thank you so beautifully.
But you react to an audience. An audience makes you come alive. I can hear that, and it was extraordinarily inspiring to hear your performance.
Thank you so much.
Clearly, Dasha, the training here at the Frost School has served you well, but you're just about to graduate. What are your plans for next year?
Well, I had wonderful 2 years here pursuing my master's degree with Professor Tian Ying. And in the fall of 2015, I'm starting my DMA program with Tina Dahl at the Stony Brook University in New York.
Okay. You're originally from Ukraine, and I know you're extremely close with your mom, who still lives there. Are you going to take a break over this summer and see her?
Yes, I am going to spend the whole summer in Ukraine. I usually go every summer, but last summer I couldn't. Yeah. So I haven't seen her for 2 years. Super excited.
There's something you want to do as you keep going back home. As Bartok brought the folk music of Hungary to the world, you want to do the same for the music of Ukraine?
Well, in a way, I don't know how global it's going to get. It's just, you know, ideas, but I grew up in a village, and my whole family sings, and we find great joy singing Ukrainian folk songs. And what I would like to do is just go to similar kind of villages, maybe find like a cappella groups of like, you know, like older people who are singing, you know, very old folk songs, like raw, you know, and mm-hmm. just maybe record them and maybe be able to notate them and transcribe and bring it to wide audience in the United States as well.
I mean, I think that sounds like a wonderful
idea. I would
love
to do that.
It's wonderful to hear you speak with such fondness about returning to your home country, because when you were first on our show, we talked about your struggles with American immigration policies in order to leave Ukraine to attend the Aspen Music Festival. It's an amazing, miraculous tale, actually, and I want to tell our listeners that they can go to our website to hear Dasha and her generous American sponsors tell that story. I would love to say, you know, I can't wait till the next time I hear you play, Dasha, but we get to hear you play right now. So this is wonderful. You've got a great piece to take us out of today's program. What will it be?
I'm going to play Rachmaninov, Musical Moment in E minor.
A spectacular way to end our show today. I want to thank all of our young performers, and thank you kids for listening in the audience, our wonderful musical students here at the Frost School, and thank you all in the home audience. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Please join me next week. And now, Dasha, take it from the top. Thank you.
From the Top is written and produced by Tom Bagley and Tim Banker, with music director Tom Vinieri. The tour producer is David Balsam, and the production manager is Elizabeth DeVore. Technical direction by Barrett Willett, with Dan Hallis and John Servies. The executive producers are Gerald Slavin and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is an independent nonprofit organization based in Boston. Our founding partners are New England Conservatory and WGBH Boston. If you'd like to appear in our program, apply online at fromthetop.org. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory, where outstanding young artists and inspirational teachers are transforming classical music.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and from the May Family Foundation, supporting Fountain House, committed to providing opportunities for people with mental illness to live, work, and learn through a community of mutual support. More information is available at fountainhouse.org. And from Emily and Antoine Van Ochtmail, supporting New Futures, which works to help low-income D.C. area youth graduate from community college or certificate programs and become financially self-sufficient. Information is available at newfuturesdc.org.
This is Christopher O'Reilly, and I hope you had fun listening to this week's podcast. As you might imagine, making From the Top happen week after week costs quite a bit of dough. If you believe in what we do, we really need you to help us out. Make a contribution of any size at fromthetop.org. And now some bonus content for podcast listeners only. My complete break piece from the show. This is a performance of my own arrangement of Leonard Cohen's Suzanne.